Hey guys, Dave here of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom and I recently put together our thoughts and observations. We really hope you enjoy this. Catch is, we went a little long, and what we're going to do is split this up into two parts. We're going to have a little bit of a hard stop on part one and a little bit of a hard start on part two. Nothing dramatic, you'll ease right through it, but I wanted to set that up front. Also want to commit to you that we're going to have part two dropping really quickly, so there won't be much of a delay, just maybe a day or two. So we hope you enjoy it. Go to the website or the Facebook site and give us your feedback, give us your thoughts, and we hope you enjoy. Roll Tide. Thanks.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tommy, today's A-Day, a point roughly halfway between the end of the bowl season and the start of fall camps. Typically, it's a time for coaches to teach, for players to develop, and fans to bask in the live football action scrimmage style, something 90,000-plus fans did today in Bryant-Denny Stadium. It's also a time, I think, for us to have a little bit of accountability in that in our February off-season review, we stepped through a number of topics that we wanted to watch and storylines that we wanted to track during spring drills and the spring scrimmage sessions, and I think we ought to take an opportunity to revisit each of those topics, and then we can break down the game, some of our observations from the game. You good with that?
That sounds good.
All right, let's get started. We had about six items that we wanted to track through spring practice, and so why don't we just hit these one through six. First up is these are the order that we reviewed them in February. First up is Robbie Green. We were both looking forward to seeing him back on the field, and we were wondering where he would get his minutes with Mark Barron and Lester and some of the younger guys. Interesting now to look back upon that, knowing what it is we know. What do you think about Robbie Green?
You know, I'm extremely surprised. I really haven't tried to delve into finding out what's going on here as far as the story. And, you know, you and I have read, you know, some of the similar practice reports from different people who have the ability to be at practice for the 5 or 10 minutes of media viewing period day in and day out. And several of those have been like, you know, if he's not back by the midway point of spring, then, you know, things are going to start looking, you know, sketchy as far as his return. And with him being the contributor that he was, and with what we have heard took place, and we were hoping this was past him, you know, that he had put this behind him, and, you know, it just makes you wonder. He seemed like a smart, heady kid, and I'm kind of surprised. I'm kind of floored with this one.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it just, you know, we were wondering where he was going to get his minutes, and, you know, not to be trite, but it looks like he's not. And he and both Brandon Moore are in a similar situation in that we don't know what the story is. We don't know the details. There's been a lot of rumor and speculation. Nothing's been announced, but they've not been participating in any of the drills this spring, any of the scrimmages, and they weren't even rostered, for either the Crimson and White team. So there's a better than average chance that they're both gone. But I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear an official announcement from Coach Saban and the athletic department until the start of fall camp. The players may decide that they're going to move on and be gone, but I don't think we hear anything from the university until fall camp. And that's all about giving these guys additional opportunities and keeping our options open as well.
Well, and in typical Saban fashion too, right? He keeps everything close to the vest, and you know, we were kidding tonight about, you know, about different ways in which he runs his program like an NFL team. Well, man, think about this in years past with other coaches, and this would have just been a story that would have just gained legs. You know, old coaches in the past, for the first or second practice that Robbie Green wasn't there, it would have become the Robbie Green watch. Well, guess what? Coach Saban hasn't even addressed it with the media, and he hadn't even let the story go anywhere.
Yeah, he kicked the legs out from under that stool very quickly, and no one has seemed willing to broach the question. So I guess we'll continue to watch, but I don't expect to see Robbie Green back, which is disappointing because I think he had some NFL potential.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
All right, our next storyline is disappointing perhaps as well, but I think for other reasons. We were both looking forward to Kendall Kelly coming back. He was a player that spent most of last year on the medical unable to perform list. He came to Alabama as a highly rated wide receiver, spent some time in the defensive backfield when we were thin there. We were questioning, you know, what happens with Kendall with regards to his position as well as his health. And not long after our February report, it was announced a handful of players that would not participate in spring drills for medical reasons, and Kendall Kelly was one of the names on that list. Any chance he's back, or do we think he's done?
You would have to think that he is done. And I guess just in typical Saban fashion, it's almost like they're given every opportunity behind the scenes to be able to contribute. He doesn't make a story with this, just like we just spoke about Robbie Green. This is a total different situation. But it's like, my teams are not going to have a distraction. And it sounds like the injuries that he suffered in high school, that he hasn't been able to overcome these. And, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theory out, you know, theorists out there that talk about, you know, every offseason there's a conveniently there's so many people that we make room for on the scholarship, so, you know, that we can get under the magic number of 85. So if we were not so close to the program, one would have to say, gosh, it seems like every season there's always different reasons why 8 to 14 guys aren't with the team, you know, the following season. So it is a little head scratch that we have a high number of these guys.
It is. I think that Saban's a master at, you know, it's a finite number of roster positions we have, you know, relative to scholarships that can be offered. And I just think he manages that better than any other coach or any other program that certainly we've even experienced at Alabama and other schools as well. You know, there is attrition. You know, Saban talks about players making decisions, you know, for themselves that impact their ability to be on the team. And I think Robbie Green and a Brandon Moore fit in that situation. And then there's guys that are medically unable to perform, and it can be for whatever reason. And why we have a high number of that versus other schools, I don't know. I don't think that we would have more injuries than anyone else, but I think we use the availability of that option more than other schools. And if you got a guy that's not going to be able to play for medical reasons, you know, you could keep him around as almost a mascot, so that he's on an athletic scholarship and part of the team. Or you can keep him close to the team and put him on an academic scholarship, and he still gets his education. I don't see the downside of using that if truly it's a player that the medical staff says can't perform.
No, and we've even talked at one time about how Coach Saban truly treats these scholarships as an annual right. And, you know, I think that the huge thing for these players is they're like, man, being one of those 85 guys that's fortunate enough to have a scholarship, man, that's a pretty damn big deal. And I'm not going to screw that up.
Yeah, it's a privilege, and it's not a right. And, you know, we covered this before, but you know, Christian Jones, an incoming freshman cornerback, was at a football camp. I guess it was last summer. And out of all the camp attendees, when they asked, do you know that an athletic scholarship is a one-year scholarship that is renewed, you know, four or five times? It's not a four-year out-of-the-go decision. And he's the only one at the camp that knew that. And that speaks to Saban's going to manage his roster year by year, but everyone knows what they're getting into, and it's a decision to come in and perform and compete and earn repeatedly this honor, and then we'll live up to our, you know, sort of our end of the deal, if you will. So I think he, you know, from all accounts, he's honest and he's forthright, and everyone knows what they're getting into. You know, Kendall Kelly, it's a situation where I honestly do think it's a medical situation. It's an issue, like you've said, that's plagued him back to high school, and it's you know, it goes back to you know, to change gears a little bit, but it goes back to recruiting. You know, highly rated, you know, maybe a four-star receiver, highly rated player. Several schools were very highly interested in him, wanted him. It was a tough recruiting battle. Didn't think that we were going to get him, but we did. And then he's not going to be able to perform. And it just speaks to, you know, you can have high recruiting classes and there's value to that, but, you know, you still may have guys even in those classes that don't compete and don't contribute.
No, that's true.
All right. Moving on. The next topic that we were looking at is receiving core. Who's really going to step up behind Darius Hanks and Marquise Mays, and, you know, and replacing Julio? I don't know if that's the right phrase. We spent the last 3 years wondering, you know, even when Julio was a freshman, we spent the last 3 years wondering who was going to play opposite of Julio. And I don't know if we ever got a final answer on that. Won a national championship along the way, though. But I think that behind Darius and Marquise, we do need some additional receivers. And so who rounds out that core, I think, was one of our questions going into spring. Coming out of spring drills, how would you answer that question?
You know, as I look at the roster, you know, the A-Day roster that you had put together with the different receivers, it's like the, you know, so many different names here. You know, I think no one really made a big push today to be that number three guy. I don't know if it was a factor of a couple different things. You know, Coach Saban said at halftime that, you know, the defenses was pushing the collapsing the pocket and we weren't, you know, preventing the quarterbacks from really stretching the field. Well, okay, but, you know, we talked about last year about this team not stretching the field as much as we really wanted to. We talked about when we got into the 35-yard line range and within the end zone, let's take some chances. Let's not wait till we get to the 20. And we talked about maybe that wasn't in McElroy's repertoire. Well, you know, we go into the game today with two quarterbacks that have stronger arms, mm-hmm. and we've got some freshmen who are now redshirt freshmen that can get on the field today. And I was excited to see some of them and the speed that they brought to the game. And I thought we'd see a little more down the field between the injuries to the secondary, right? And between, you know, Mark Barron, who's out there, but maybe he can't cover the same way he can cover in the fall. I was a little disappointed, you know, with all the checkdowns and all the times to Trent Richardson and, you know, not until the very end of the game with a minute left and, you know, the white team's trying to, you know, come back and win the game, did we really even see a 20-yard pass?
Yeah, and that's fair. And that was a have-to situation as opposed to part of the game plan. And, you know, we went down the field a couple of times, and there were a couple of decent, you know, Brandon Gibson had a nice catch near the boundary. And you know, there was a down-the-field throw to Trent as well. But I didn't see a receiver that really emerged. You know, Brandon Gibson was Brandon Gibson. You know, he's a senior, a lot of experience in the system, and so he runs the routes, he knows the system, and he's going to be a contributor. But, and I'm not discounting Brandon Gibson, but I didn't see one or more other players. And I did, frankly, I didn't even see Mark, you know, Mays and Darius really excel, but I didn't see anyone else. We tried to go to DeAndre White a couple of times, but I didn't see anyone that really, you know, jumped off the page at me.
You know, that's a good point you just made about Mays and Hanks, because we talked about this, you know, toward the later stages of the game that we had not even really seen them make a play, and we were debating which one of them had made a catch. We knew one of them had made a catch, but we were not sure which. Well, think about that for a minute. You got two guys who are coming back as seniors. They are supposed to be picking up the baton from Julio Jones. It's like, okay, the star actor has left. It's now our time to shine. And really, neither one of them really, I mean, I'm sure they're still going to be a contributor in the fall, but neither one of them jumped out there and said, hey, it's okay that Julio's gone. We got this.
We got this.
I didn't see that from either one of them today.
The biggest storyline, and I'm going to cheat a little bit, I guess, but you know, it's reality. The biggest storyline that I have relative to the wide receiver position coming out of the spring session is Daron Carter. Chris Carter's son, JUCO, went to Ohio State, left there due to grades and potentially other issues, but you know, spent the last year in JUCO, and committed to us, I think after the first, maybe the second scrimmage, in fall camp, and he'll be eligible to play this fall. And so, you know, he's a 6'4", 208, you know, 210 wide receiver. I pencil him as a starter. I think Mays and Darius, obviously they're the starters, but on a three receiver set, he's a starter. I think that's the biggest development that I've seen at the wide receiver position this spring.
Do you think it was a factor? Because even though the defenses were putting pressure on the quarterback and getting a lot of pressure on the offensive line, which we'll talk about in a minute, do you think that they were trying not to put too much pressure on the two young quarterbacks in the quarterback battle? And, hey, man, let's just let them make their reads and manage the game, and you know, let's just work on the short passing game today and see how accurate they are. And you know, was that it? Because I mean, I'm trying to look for reasons why we didn't even see Mays and Hanks do a whole lot, much less the downfield passing game.
I think you got two quarterbacks in a true, you know, live situation, 90,000 fans, you know, amped up, you know, players are around them, and I've, you know, they look spotty at times. Now they looked really good at times too.
Both of them.
But they look spotty. I, you know, we're going to talk about the offensive line. That's the most troubling spot on, you know, in terms of a full unit, that's the most troubling unit on the team for me right now. And so I think, you know, when we go too deep on defense, we're going to be significantly stronger than our two deep on across the offensive line. And so it's a, you know, chicken or egg situation in terms of, you know, could we not pass because of the receivers, or could we not pass because we didn't have time to pass? And I think that's where that situation lies. I think it will sort itself out and our offensive line will get better. And it may be that they don't play a defense as good as our first team defense, at least until you know, the LSU game in November. So they may not place the starting offensive line may not face a defense as strong as what they saw today, you know, for another 6 months, and by that time there'll be a gelled unit. So I think that, you know, you said check downs. I think, you know, clearly we did check down some today. I don't think there were some called passes to the running backs, of course. But I think there were a lot of checkdowns. There was a lot of good. You know, there were definitely some good. There was a lot of suspect there. You know, we've got the summer, you know, a lot of 7-on-7 drills the teams will run. And, you know, 29 practices in the fall. So I think they'll get better. They'll improve. But I think Daron Carter is going to be a big add for us at the wide receiver position. Moving to our next topic. And you know, I think we'll spend some time with this based on our observations of A-Day. But we kind of hinted at this at our last topic. But one of the things that we definitely wanted to see, a storyline we wanted to track in this spring practice, is Aaron Douglas, a.k.a. Vanilla Ice, replacing James Carter. And we made a little bit of to-do over James Carter being a JUCO, highly ranked JUCO recruit, come in, pick up the mantle from Andre Smith, and is a two-year starter, sort of an unsung hero of the team the last couple of years. You know, he comes in for Carter, and if he doesn't play at the level that he did, we don't win the national title.
No.
And it sort of, he was the pencil in as a starter from day one. And so we were expecting a repeat of that model. And I guess we're kind of spoiled by the success we had with Carter. But we were expecting a repeat of that model with Aaron Douglas. And it was a little bit of a shock to me that, that Aaron Douglas was, and even his primary, what I thought was his primary competition in Alfred McCullough, neither of them were on the starting offense. And in effect, what we did is we moved Barrett Jones from guard over to tackle.
When was that decided? How many days ago did you hear about this?
Well, I think he practiced a little bit earlier in the week, but I did not officially hear that, hey, this is what it's going to be, until the rosters came out, and whenever that was, Wednesday or Thursday of the week before. And so that's when it officially, hey, this is real. Barrett Jones is going to play left tackle, and he's never done that, while he's been here, other than maybe a little bit of practice time. What's your thought on the offensive line? Aaron Douglas, Barrett Jones, McCullough. We've talked a lot of players here. What's your thought?
My first thought is I'd like to be able to have seen that first or second scrimmage before the A-Day game, because it makes you wonder if, Aaron Douglas, played on, the first team, and Alfred McCullough was the other left tackle on the twos, and then vice versa in the first two scrimmages. And if the coaches was like, scratching their heads saying, okay, we got to come up with a third option here because these guys are not getting it done against Courtney Upshaw. And, they talked over the past few days that in the last week of spring, they experiment. All teams do. They all look to say, well, hey, can we try you at this different position and see if you're a better fit here? That's when a guy like a Kendall Kelly would have gotten moved from a wide receiver to a DB before, and let's just see how things go. That's when a BJ Scott was moved from, wide receiver to secondary. I was hoping when you told me before the game that this had happened or was going to happen, that, man, all they're doing is having a contingency plan. All they're doing is they don't want an Aaron Douglas to get hurt, and here we are, LSU's coming up next, and oh shit, what are we going to do? It was kind of like when Andre Smith did what he did in the Sugar Bowl, and, they've got to scramble and move their left guard to left tackle, and you know what happened in the Utah game. And it was almost like, we just got to have our ducks in a row. Well, after what I saw today, it was not a contingency plan. I truly think it was Aaron Douglas in its current state and form, and Alfred McCullough in its current state and current form is not the answer. And we need to see if Barrett Jones is. And from what I saw today, Barrett Jones held up better against Courtney Upshaw than Aaron Douglas, Tyler Love, and Alfred McCullough held up against the freshmen and the sophomores,
Adrian Hubbard,
on the backup,
mm-hmm,
on the second team.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I thought, and before we watched A-Day and we were talking about this, and gosh, why do you think, we did this? And I spelled out, hey, I think it's for these two reasons. I think we're telling, Alfred and Aaron that neither of you are playing well enough to be the starter, so we're going to relegate you to second team and light a fire under your ass. And parallel to that, we're going to move Barrett out there so that we are building contingency, just as you alluded to. And so when we started looking at the roster and the second team offense went on the field, and we were even watching the huddle as they, you know, okay, you know, it's Shepherd is standing next to,
right,
you know, next to, right, you know, whoever, you know, and
we saw McCullough at left guard.
We saw McCullough at guard. Well, no, you're supposed to be standing, you know, you're standing in the wrong place because you're going to play the other tackle because that's what you're going to. And sure enough, you know, what we thought was the primary competition for Aaron Douglas at the left tackle ended up playing left guard. And so
he didn't even play at left tackle in the whole game.
He didn't even play, that we were able to see, did not play tackle at all.
You're competing for a job that you don't even get to play in the A-Day game. What does that tell you?
Well, yeah, and so what's interesting to me, and not interesting in a positive way, but it's interesting to me now, how is that position going to play out? Because I can honestly, as we sit here today, and I'm a little bit flummoxed, as we sit here today, I can make the case that Aaron Douglas, you know, has played in the SEC. He played at Tennessee, was an All-America freshman as a freshman. So it's not like he earned that playing in the Pac-10 or the Mountain West or, you know, the Big East or some conference like that. He earned that playing in the SEC. He's a little light, he can pick up some weight, but there's a part of me that says I can make a case that Aaron Douglas is going to do what he needs to do, learn the system, get a little bit bigger, get stronger, get confident in the offense, and he's going to be the left tackle. I can make that case. I can make the case that McCullough, who started at two positions on the offensive line at various times last season, that he's going to use this as motivation. He's going to be a senior. He wants his last opportunity, and he's going to come in like a whirling dervish in the fall, and he's going to earn the position. I can make the case, based on what we saw today, that Barrett Jones is going to earn the position because he played it as well, as better than anyone that we saw today. And you're right, he went up against Courtney Upshaw, who is,
he's our best pass rusher.
When he's healthy, is going to be one of the better pass rushers, I think, you know, potentially in the country. And he held his own, and he got better as the game went on. And there's some things that we noticed that we can talk to. But my point is, I could make the case that he's the guy. And so that's three guys. And then all of a sudden, I can make the case that Cyrus Kuanjo, who's a textbook, you know, prototypical, carved out of granite left tackle, you know, central casting kind of left tackle, that he's going to roll on the campus after watching, you know, the left tackle debacle on A-Day and say, hey, this is an open competition. No one's blowing smoke, I can tell. And I can make a case that he starts at left tackle. And so that's very disconcerting, because it's not, hey, look at these four great options. It's, I'm very uncomfortable here, and I don't know where we go.
As I told you after the game, I do not think there are many true freshmen who are able to come in at the SEC level and start as a true freshman and is able to do what Andre Smith did. And I don't have the particulars right here in front of us as we were preparing for this on Cyrus and his frame and build. But I think that would be a tall order for him. And I truly think right now as we sit, we're going to see Barrett Jones at left tackle. And so suddenly it floors me with Aaron Douglas. And I'm not throwing him away. I mean, like you said, there's 29 practices to go. But... you know, when he signed at 277 pounds, you and I both scratched our head and said, wait a minute, left tackle, 277 pounds. The last two left tackles we've had at Alabama, and Andre Smith and Carpenter, have been in the 340, 330 to 350 range.
Sure.
And they were both very athletic.
Yeah, I'm not calling on Cyrus to come in and save the day, but I'm just saying, based on what we saw today, he's in the mix. And going into today, I would have guaranteed a red shirt. And so here we are at the end of the day. I'm not guaranteeing that. He's live fire in the mix as far as I'm concerned. So I'm a little bit disconcerted at that position. I didn't expect that going into today, but coming out of today, that's kind of where I am on that. So we're going to have to definitely track that. Just one note, we're talking a lot about tackles here, and one tackle that we've not mentioned is DJ Fluker. We have not mentioned him in this conversation because he has not been injected into this situation. He is a right tackle. In my notes, I have in capital letters, not a left tackle. He's not a left tackle, or he would have been given an opportunity. Is that fair?
It is fair. For those of y'all that, you know, yes, he was the number one rated offensive lineman coming out of high school, a position he had only played his senior year in high school. And yes, having met the guy up close in person, he's a beast. I mean, he's 6'7", 350, 60 pounds, huge wingspan. And he's only played this position for, this is going on his third year. And so could he get better at the position over time? Sure. Could he play left tackle in the future? Possibly. Today, no. He is not ready to play that position. I'm glad we have somebody of his size and frame that can man the right tackle. And like you and I talked about, I hope one of these other three options takes the left tackle, because I'd like Barrett Jones back at right guard to help Fluker out on the right side.
Yeah, we saw a couple instances even in spring, you know, even in A-Day where, you know, Fluker would have performed better had he had sort of the blanket or the security of Barrett there at the guard position.
And I guess let me throw one other thing real quick, guys. Something else that I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't mention as well. For those of you, you know, not to bring up the bad memories of the Auburn game, where, you know, where Steen had to come in at right guard and take over some slack there and let Nick Fairley do what Nick Fairley did. Anthony Steen has not learned anything since that game either, and he is not the option at right guard. And so we need Barrett Jones to move back over to right guard because Steen's not ready to be a starter.
Yeah, I was hoping to see when he was named on the starting squad at that position, I was hoping to see some improvement and I'm not really sure that I did. And so, like I said, that contributes to the whole, disconcerting, review of the offensive line. And that's just kind of where we are there. It is a little bit frustrating. So, that's going to be I give this an inconclusive grade. And in fact, I've regressed in my assessment of the line based on what I saw today. Again, there were two scrimmages and 14 practices that we didn't see. But based on what we, you know, saw, what was available to us, today, I'm not real pleased at where we are on this position. So that's something we're going to have to track. You know, maybe there's some additional reports that come out during the summer. And certainly as fall camp opens, it's something that we're going to get to watch very closely. I guess I'm glad that this is a year that we're starting with a Kent State rather than a Virginia Tech or a Clemson, you know, highly rated teams at the time. Maybe that'll give us some live fire opportunity to test out a couple guys even in a real game.
Absolutely.
Hey, why don't we flip to the next topic that we talked about, having some interest in, and that was the defensive line. I think most specifically we were looking at the JUCO players, Jesse Williams and Quentin Dial. What did you see of them today?
You know, in Saban fashion, we have seen that he does not bring in JUCOs unless he really expects that they're going to be able to contribute. And, that was very obvious when he brought in Terrence Cody. And there's been a lot of excitement around Jesse Williams. I guess even more so, Quentin Dial's kind of been under the radar. You know, Quentin Dial, obviously, for those, you know, everybody else out there knows he had signed with Alabama and then gotten, you know, didn't qualify, had to go to JUCO, and has really shown a commitment to want to come back and play for the University of Alabama. I saw more flashes from him today than I did Jesse Williams. Jesse Williams, he's a little... Jesse Williams seemed like he was overwhelmed by the moment, and that he's not, maybe not overwhelmed by the moment, but he doesn't have his legs under him yet. Quentin Dial, you know, he's got that prototypical frame that Saban wants in his 3-4 defensive ends. I mean, he is a 300-pounder who looks 250, long wingspan. He was in the backfield several times today, and he did not get a sack, and he did not get a big tackle for a loss because we didn't really run the ball very much. We pretty much passed the whole game. But I saw more from him than I did from Jesse, and maybe that's because Jesse was just taking up double teams.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I think you mentioned Jesse didn't appear to have his legs under him. There's something to that. He did have some cleanup knee surgery, earlier, not in spring camp, obviously, but, earlier this year. And so within, weeks and months of
since he
of
came spring, here, right?
Yeah, since he's been here.
Okay,
yes.
Well, then that speaks so a lot to the guy, to the fact that he's actually even
– Yeah, the fact that he's even out there. And so he's a guy that's going to get better the more time he has in the system, the more time in the four-quarter program. Saban is sort of a colorful comment, but, he when asked, after practice one day about these two guys, Dial and Williams, he said, they're at times they'll play bula bula ball. And, I took that to mean that, maybe they get a little tired in their technique. They're not real honed in the technique and they don't know all the plays, but they're just going to get after somebody and they're just going to kind of roughhouse, which they can do. But without really knowing the context in which they needed to do it on a given play, and so I think as they learn the system, they're gonna develop well. I think Williams was the sexier player because he's from Australia, and we had never heard of him until only he committed, and the pictures of him with all the tattoos sort of legendary, and Quentin Dial's like, oh yeah, that's that guy that committed
from a few years ago,
come back, and all that. And so the story there wasn't as sexy, but he looked very, very good today. And the way you described him, he looks smaller than he is, but he's huge in his proportions. He's gonna set that edge, and we saw it today. We saw it in A-Day that he set the edge. And it was just good to see because we haven't seen that, in a while.
I'm sorry to cut you off. It's funny you say that because he is a more athletic Brandon Dietrich. Brandon Dietrich was able, Brandon Dietrich and who was the other?
Lorenzo Washington.
He's a more athletic version of them. He's got a longer wingspan. He's a lighter guy. He's more agile. He's more athletic. When Coach Saban was talking about this class, he said we had to get more athletic in our front seven. And to your point, we haven't had that edge for 2 years now.
Yep.
And he seemed to hold it today.
Yeah. And that's fair. And I think those guys are going to contribute. They're going to be very important players for us. We heard Saban say that today. They're going to get better
depth
and we're going to have depth, in and around them. Brandon Ivory played some today and he looked good, and he's a redshirt freshman and he seems to have remade his build. He was a little on a sloppy, chunky side and he's still 300 pounder, but he seems to be built a little differently. And I think he's going to add some depth. Nick Gentry, he has a motor and he gets some good pass rush from the inside. He's a guy a couple years ago we were kind of surprised to see him rotating in, but he's performed very well. And Josh Chapman, I think we've got a lot of athleticism, even just right there in the middle, and then you rotate in some of the other guys or you include some of the other guys, a Damian Square and we saw Stinson play some today. So we have a lot of names. We have a lot of bodies. We have a lot of people. It's just who's going to bubble up to the top. And I think when it's all said and done, when we line up in September, I think Jesse Williams and Quentin Dial will be right there at the top, getting meaningful minutes early and often. Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll tide.
All right. Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's
13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our MO as a team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.